density altitude, what it is, and how it can bite you. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, also of Bob Miller Flight Training in the Buffalo, New York area. Bob, first, we always appreciate your willingness to take some time out for our listeners today.
My pleasure as always, Paul.
One of the things you talked about, Bob, in the January edition of Over the Airwaves is taking the mystery out of pressure and density altitude. This is kind of interesting because there's a whole bunch of different kinds of altitude. You know, I actually try to keep up on them, and every once in a while I'll slip up and mix up pressure and density altitude. What is the difference between them, and why do we care?
Well, the reason we care is, like hypertension, density altitude is a silent killer. We can't feel it. We can't see it. Winds, icing, thunderstorms, tornadoes, microbursts, all of those other weather factors are easily observable. But density altitude is what I call that silent killer. It has the potential of disarming even a very proficient pilot if he's not prepared for what density altitude can bring us. And to understand what density altitude is, Paul, we have to go back and look at pressure altitude. And pressure altitude is nothing other than the weight of the atmosphere. And the weight of the atmosphere changes. And it changes simply because of the unequal heating of the Earth's surface by the sun. So we have rising air, we have sinking air, otherwise known as high pressure areas and low pressure areas, and that changes the weight of the atmosphere. And we measure the weight of the atmosphere just by going out on our airplane, putting 2992 in the Colesman window, reading the hands off of the altimeter, and that'll tell us what the pressure atmosphere is for a particular day. That alone is not a major problem. Pressure altitude may change, but it's not going to create a huge difference in the way our airplane perceives the air that it needs to operate in to perform properly. But what does change dramatically is something called density altitude. And in the most simplistic terms, Paul, density altitude is simply pressure altitude corrected for temperature. So you take any given day at any given airport in the wintertime, you realize, and most of us have easily see this, our airplanes perform much, much better than they do on a hot August day where the temperatures are up around 80 or 90 degrees. And so density altitude has a huge effect on overall aircraft performance. And in certain areas of the country, an even more profound effect than in other areas.
Well, I know that one of the famous places where density altitude bites people is Leadville, Colorado, which has an altitude just shy of 10,000 feet, an elevation just shy of 10,000 feet MSL. And there are pilots who will fly in there in the summer and go to fly out and find they have to wait till after dark to get their planes off the ground. That's an extreme case, but there are a lot of places out west here, and I'm talking from the perspective of Salt Lake City, Utah, where a lot of our valley is at, you know, 4,400 or 4,500 feet, and a lot of what we'll need to fly over is 10,000 feet higher than that. And so a lot of times we never even bother with pressure altitude because they actually report density altitude as an important precaution, you know, on the ATIS just for being able to operate your aircraft that day.
Yes, and that's what I was referring to in some areas of the country where we're already operating off of at an altitude above 8,000 feet above sea level, and then we add high temperatures to that so that an airport such as Leadville, which has, say, a 9,000-foot above sea level on a standard day, add a high temperature, that density altitude will lift that airport figuratively up to some 11,000 feet in density altitude. And that's where the aircraft itself thinks it's at. So, I mean, it'll race down the highway, race down the runway, and possibly even lift off in ground effect, which is kind of a unique cushioning of the air that enables us to get off. But outside of ground effect, it will not fly. And on this issue that I have coming up, I have a clip from a YouTube video of a Bonanza that, for all intents and purposes, it looked like it just succumbed to high-density altitude. It struggled to get off the ground. It barely got out in ground effect and, unfortunately, didn't make it and came right back down off the end of the runway with a fatality. And this is a very vivid illustration of how density altitude can get us. Now, this is not the best time of the year in the northern hemisphere to be talking about density altitude, but believe me, if you're used to flying in the wintertime and accept a certain level of performance from your airplane, and then you do not fly it again until a hot day in July or August, you're going to see a huge difference. I included also a chart, it's a fairly common chart, on how to compute density altitude, and based upon temperature, it's fairly standard, but we need to know how to use these charts so that we can determine just what effect it's going to have on our aircraft on any given day.
All right. Now, you did already touch on my next question, and that is that we can find pressure altitude at any time by putting 29.92 in the Colesman and then looking at what the hands on the altimeter read. But in terms of converting that then with temperature to density altitude, do we need to keep that chart somewhere in the plane, or how else could we determine that?
Yeah, we need to have the chart at least in our flight bag. And now, again, going back to earlier discussions you and I have had about certain gadgetry, even on the iPhone, there are now programs that will convert pressure altitude to density altitude. All we need to know is pressure altitude and the outside temperature, and it'll come up with a density altitude right on our iPhone. So whether we're using an electronic calculator such as an iPhone or a chart, we should have one in our flight bag at any time we're in an airport where this becomes an issue. And where it does become an issue, and I've seen it, we've seen it at Oshkosh when people attempt to leave or arrive at Oshkosh with heavily laden airplanes, and the outside temperature is over 90 degrees, even though the field elevation is below 1,000 feet, it still lifts that field figuratively up to 3,000 to 4,000 feet MSL, and the performance is simply not there. And where we see the performance change is in the huge increase in the amount of runway required to take off. And this is something at Oshkosh at Whitman Field is not really a problem because we do have long runways, but you'll see single engine airplanes taking a lot of runway to get off. Just imagine trying to do that coming out of a 2,500-foot field or a 3,000-foot field en route to Oshkosh. And there we could have a problem.
Well, and especially at that time of year.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to move on to talk about steep turns, which is in your AirWork article for this month. My guest is Bob Miller. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Here to talk for a few minutes about steep turns. And Bob, this is part of a series you started a couple months ago called AirWork, where we're kind of basically back in the gym with calisthenics, to use that analogy, on things that every pilot should know, but some pilots either are not taught adequately or let get rusty over the years.
Yeah, and one particular maneuver that is more revealing than any other maneuver we can do as pilots is the steep turn. In fact, I think most designated pilot examiners will tell you, and I've certainly seen this doing flight reviews, that whenever asked to do a steep turn, you can usually tell, usually within the first 30 to 40 degrees around the circle, as to whether or not that pilot is prepared or is capable of passing a check ride. it's an extremely revealing maneuver because it's a difficult maneuver. It's a complex maneuver, more so than any other maneuver on the private pilot practical test standards. And why is that? The answer is fairly simple when you diagnose and take apart what a steep turn does to an airplane. It alters the lift, the weight, the drag, and the thrust. We have four forces of flight that are changing constantly as the airplane is banked into a steep turn.
What normally goes wrong with people? I mean, you've mentioned your little scenario-based drill where you pretend you're on a photo mission and find out, you know, at what point the student realizes, if at all, that getting into a steeper bank or a slower speed in the bank will run up on that stall under load factor. But what exactly is the technique for practicing this, and what should we be watching for?
Well, lots of things that need to be watching simply because everything is changing. Let's just take the angle of bank, for example. Once that angle of bank goes beyond 45 degrees, our lift is all but destroyed. We have that vertical component of lift which is now leaning over towards a horizontal. The airplane just simply wants to descend. It just does not have enough lift, vertical lift, to offset the force of gravity. So in order to offset that loss of lift, we have to do two other things. We have to increase the angle of attack, which in turn increases drag, and we have to add some power, which increases thrust. And as we do that, other forces are beginning to change. So how do we practice it? The best way to practice it, like any other maneuver, is to take a safety pilot up, put that pilot in the right seat or the left seat, depending on how you want to do this, and set some standards. And the standards are very well laid out in the private pilot practical test standards, the PTS. We want to do this maneuver plus or minus 100 feet. So if we're going to do it at 3,500 feet, we need to get all the way around without, you know, change in altitude of more than 100 feet. We want to hold that bank angle at 45 degrees or some specified bank angle, plus or minus 5 degrees of bank. We need to maintain speed, plus or minus 5 knots, and we need to roll out on our initial heading, plus or minus 10 degrees. So there's an awful lot to watch out for, and this is an exercise that every one of us could be doing anytime we flew take off for that $100 hamburger. En route, somewhere along the way, somebody says to the other guy, a girl, let's go ahead and do a couple of steep turns and see how well we can do this. And believe me, it's a humbling exercise, even for a very seasoned pilot if they haven't done it for a while.
Is this a candidate for something to ask for in your next flight review?
Oh, yeah, and it's something that I include in every flight review. In fact, every time I do an insurance checkout, somebody wants to rent our airplane, and one of our airplanes, just to rent it. And I have not flown with that individual before. First thing I'll do is we'll just go out a little ways away from the airport, climb up to 3,000 feet, and I'll just simply say, you know, I'll ask them to do two things for me. I'll ask them to do some slow flight, and I'll ask them to do steep turns. And those two maneuvers, slow flight and steep turns, is pretty much all I need to know as to whether or not they can handle the airplane. Now, whether or not they, you know the rules of the road and the airspace, that's something else again. But in terms of maneuvering the airplane, if they can perform satisfactorily in both the steep turn and in slow flight, then I know I have a fairly proficient pilot.
Well, I guess prospective students listening to this, Bob, will know what you're going to ask them to do. So it's a valuable preparation. We appreciate the Airwork columns, and keep them coming. And we also appreciate your being willing to be with us today for a while. We'll catch you again next Monday.
Thanks, Bob.
You can find Bob Miller's newsletter at overtheairwaves.com, and you'll also see an option to sign up to receive notice by email when the next edition comes out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.